Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, August 15th, 2018. President Kiir tells state governors to get ready for some changes.
So the government will have 18 states, that is 18 governors, and the opposition will have 14 states, 14 governors.
And mediators at the peace talks say they're making progress.
Our discussions went very well. We were very cooperative among all of us. The three groups that was actually there, or the four groups, and the discussion was very, very smooth.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan President Salva Kiir told governors to get ready. Some of them will need to stand down and give up their positions to opposition-appointed governors after a revitalized peace deal is signed. Mr. Kiir briefed ministers, governors, and security chiefs about the power-sharing and governance deal he signed with the opposition, which mandates that 14 out of 32 governors be appointed by the opposition. Munyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
While assuring the country's high-ranking officials that peace is coming to South Sudan, President Kiir made it clear that some in his government will have to step down.
At the state level, the power sharing ratio is 55% for the government and 45% for the opposition. So the government will have 18 states, that is 18 governors, and the opposition will have 14 states, 14 governors. Also, out of all the counties in South Sudan, the opposition will take almost half of the commissioners and county councillors. You can now deduce from the above that some of you governors will lose your positions as governors or become deputy governors if you are lucky. Similarly, some of your county commissioners as well as county councillors will have to give way for the opposition. That is the price of peace. And I do not want you also to pick up your guns and then you rebel against the system.
Under the revitalized peace deal, President Kiir says his administration retains 57% of the ministerial positions. The opposition gets 43% in the Transitional Government of National Unity, or TGONU.
The TGONU conceded in almost everything, from the Council of Ministers to the Parliament, the states, and the local government to the county councils, just because I wanted peace to return to our country and for our people to regain their dignity.
The transitional government was formed in April 2016, following the signing of the 2015 peace deal. President Kiir says his team of negotiators in Khartoum is ironing out what he calls minor issues with the opposition groups for a final peace deal to be signed, which mediators say is expected to happen by the end of the week, insisting that there can be no stability in the country with the existing proliferation of weapons. The president told the governors all guns in the hands of civilians will be removed under the deal security arrangement.
It provided that civilians will be disarmed throughout South Sudan. It will allow us to eradicate the culture of warlords, forming militia and civilians using armed firearms for cattle raiding, looting, revenge killings, and causing general insecurity all over the country. You, as the governors, must take this message can start selling it to our people now so that they understand it properly and so that they cooperate with the government.
The president is urging all government officials to focus on serving their people in order to win future democratic elections.
The time to get power without working hard for it is now gone.
National elections have been put on hold in South Sudan as government and opposition parties work on a revitalized peace deal to end the country's 5-year conflict. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
And negotiators at the final round of those peace talks in Khartoum say they are making progress in resolving the remaining issues and hope to have a draft revitalized peace agreement by this weekend. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
Participants at the talks formed 3 committees to handle the outstanding issues when talks resumed on Monday. Committee members tasked with naming 5 new ministries as is stipulated in the power-sharing and governance deal say it made significant progress over the past 3 days. Ufondi Ndima, an official of the National Salvation Front, says committee members have suggested a Ministry of East African Affairs, a Ministry of Cooperative and Rural Development, a Ministry of Investment, a Ministry of Labor, and a Ministry of Culture, Museums and National Heritage.
Our discussions went very well. We were very cooperative among all of us. The 3 groups that was actually there, or the 4 groups, the discussion was very, very smooth. Sometimes we did ups and downs around, but it was a natural thing. In the end, we reconciled.
The same group also discussed the membership of a future body tasked with carrying out judicial reforms and the membership of a committee to amend the constitution to include provisions of a revitalized peace agreement. The committee tasked with defining the functions of the presidency says it has made progress too. But Amer Deng, head of the South Sudan Women's Bloc, says they have yet to agree on the job description of the president and vice presidents. Deng wants the 3rd most powerful position in the executive branch to be occupied by a woman, but says she has not received support from other members on that demand.
When I try to say that the 2 which are male, the 3rd one should follow as female, all of them reject, because I said the 35% automatically will follow the 2. The 1st 2 and the 3rd one should automatically come out as a female.
Under the deal signed last week by the parties, which left several issues unresolved, President Salva Kiir will remain president, while rebel leader Riek Machar will resume his post as first vice president. The agreement also categorizes cabinet ministers into sectoral clusters. Deng says the 4th cluster should be defined clearly as women and not gender, as suggested by other delegates at the talks.
All these clusters which are going to be led, including the presidency, is gender as well. The president will be in charge of everybody, all the gender. The vice president, everybody will do the same, even all these ministries. But we said this particular cluster will deal with the women and youth issues.
Members of the committee that is supposed to resolve disputes over the number of states and their boundaries say they have achieved nothing so far. Information Minister Michael Makwei, a member of the government delegation at the talks, remains hopeful an agreement will be reached this week. The mediation formed another 4th committee yesterday to deal with the security issues. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
Eyewitnesses say one person was killed and more than 60 others injured after clashes broke out between 2 communities at the UN-run protection of civilians site in Juba. They say an argument between 2 young people quickly escalated when others at the camp got involved. Demo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Juba.
Eyewitness Ruth George says the fighting started on Monday between 2 teenagers after one of the teenagers accused the other of stealing his cap. George says the fighting quickly spread out of control, adding that civilians at the Protection of Civilians, or POC-1, and those at POC-3 used harmful objects like matches, stones, sticks, and knives to fight each other. George says the fighting resumed on Tuesday.
When we were waking up, we couldn't hear people blowing trumpet, and people were using people with bundle of spears and pangas and other ample materials. And in the afternoon, it escalated into the whole camp. Everybody was very wild, and it another group was also forced out of the POC, which it really created a lot of tension. And last night, no one in the POC slept.
George says tensions remain high at the POC today, and MIS officials and community leaders are engaged in the meetings to diffuse the tension, which George says caused many casualties.
Yesterday evening, it was agreed that the camp management and the UN agree that we need to urgently resolve the problem. But it's like the young men of the same community could not understand or they could not listen to the advice from the leadership of the community and the UN at the same time. And as we speak now, there are more than 60 casualties and one person has died, but the number of people who have died could be more than one.
George says he is disappointed that while the two communities celebrated together the signing of the power-sharing and governance deal in Khartoum just a few days ago, they are still fighting each other.
I am not happy because 5 days ago they were together, they were celebrating, they were running up and down just because the peace was signed in Khartoum. But today, I am disappointed in less than 10 days that the same people who were running up and down, who were very happy celebrating, are fighting, and more than 60 of them are injured because of misunderstanding, which is of not help.
South Sudan in Focus tried but was unsuccessful obtaining comments from community leaders at the camp due to the poor phone network. In an email, Francisca Moll, the UNMISS spokesperson, confirms that 40 civilians sustained injuries in the skirmishes. Moll is calling on the two communities to end the violence so that aid workers can safely deliver food, water and other essential services to vulnerable civilians inside the POC. The statement says UNMISS peacekeepers, including soldiers and police, have intensified their presence in and around South Sudan POC sites to protect civilians and separate the fighting groups. Moll says UNMISS will continue to engage closely with camp and community leaders to help the communities negotiate an amicable solution and to promote peaceful coexistence. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. South Sudanese women and girls will soon find sanitary products more affordable. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think healthcare should be free?
Yes, I think so, because if it is free, everybody will go to the hospital when he or she is sick. But because of money, some people will be sick and they will still be in the house.
People will have to go to hospital, but because of unemployment, they can't pay for the hospital bills. So I think it must be free.
I do not think healthcare should entirely be free, no. But certain levels of healthcare, like the basic level of checkups, doing checkups, that can be free. The rest can be taken care of by the individual.
I think healthcare should be free because that is one of the social responsibilities of governments.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Lawmakers in South Sudan have removed taxes on the sale of sanitary pads imported into the country. Janet Aya Alex, who represents Yei River State's Morobo County in the National Assembly, says South Sudan's 2018-2019 budget, which is expected to be passed this week, has zero tax on the pads. Aya says sanitary products should soon be far less expensive.
11 tax on sanitary pads means increasing the price, and it means it will be difficult, especially for the girls in schools and even for the rural women to be able to buy these pads and use. And that's why we see it as an important thing that we should make sure that these sanitary pads are not a tax, so that it could reduce the value that is added on this selling of the sanitary pads. We have cases, especially in schools, girls are not turning up. They are dropping out from schools because of sanitary pads. And now if we increase taxes, that means the price of these sanitary pads will go high. And that means for us, it will mean that the rate of girls dropping out of schools will be higher than what we presume.
Is this going to be applicable in the 2018-2019 budget?
Correct, yes. And we will not want to see it again anyway, even in the budget to come.
Explain how this works. Let's say a trader in Juba imports sanitary pads from overseas. Is this trader going to pay import tax?
For the trader who is dealing particularly on sanitary pads, actually he's not going to be given that heavy taxes. It should be just a small duty that is only levied, and it should not be because of the production. I think the issue of the production is actually the issue. Because many of the traders say they bring these things from outside and where they have been taxed. That's why we say, okay, if that is the case, then it is not good that when they are bringing in these goods, like the sanitary pads, the traders themselves should not be taxed. But we don't know in the other country before they buy these goods whether it was already taxed or not. But in South Sudan, it will not be taxed.
A lot of traders in South Sudan, especially in Juba, have been complaining about what they call multiple taxes levied on them as they bring goods from outside the country. How is this going to impact on your move to scrap off taxes on sanitary pads?
The revenue authority bill was passed, and now there's going to be a revenue authority. And soon the issue of tax collection will be streamlined. And these multiple taxes, especially along the roadblocks, we even talked about the removal of these roadblocks. You know, the issue is many times enforcement, this and the law is enforced, but in a very short time, again, these people go back to the roadsides and then they begin to collect taxes. Even as you hear, Ugandan bus operators have strike. They say they've been overtaxed on the road. But this is something, of course, a challenge that our government have to work seriously on to avoid this triple or double taxing. So we want to speed the establishment of the revenue authority.
That's Janet Aya Alex, a member of parliament representing Morobo County, speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Juba earlier today. The Mandela Washington Fellowship continues in the U.S. as some students remain here for extended studies while others head home to continue their work. In part one of our series featuring this year's South Sudanese Mandela Washington Fellows, reporter Ayen Dang Bior introduces us to a wheelchair-bound fellow who says he's not letting his disability get in the way of what he wants to accomplish.
There is a shortage of statistics on the numbers and experiences of people with disabilities in South Sudan. A 2018 report by the Institute of Development Studies says it is likely to be at least 15%, as high as the global estimate. 33-year-old Daniel Maduk Bol, one of this year's Mandela Washington Fellows, says more work is needed in South Sudan to ensure that people with disabilities can move about freely.
For me, I am a person with disability, and disability is one of the diversity that need to be considered also in all the activities that are done in the country. So we need to pick up from there to consider people's disabilities, either in public facilities so that they are accommodated in school, they are accommodated in business sectors, they are accommodated.
The 2018 report says the lack of statistics in South Sudan has made lobbying for improved rights and access to services more difficult. Maduk agrees. He says traveling in and around South Sudan is a challenge because of the country's fledgling infrastructure. Maduk studied public management as part of his six-week fellowship that took him to the University of Minnesota, where he connected with other African fellows and Americans. He says a major theme of the fellowship is the idea that networking with others is a crucial aspect of succeeding, an idea he hopes to embody when he returns to South Sudan.
We need to work as a team so that when we come together, the peace can come to our country. And we want to change our attitudes because we want to quit from talking about events. Most of the South Sudanese, they discuss about events, things that happened in 1991, things that happened in 1992, and we are now in 2018. We need to focus on something that is going to happen in 2019, 2020, like that. So we need to think forward instead of thinking backward. And those are the things that bring problem to our country.
Maduk says during his six-week fellowship, he learned about the legacy of American civil rights leader Martin Luther King, who fought for the rights of all citizens, regardless of race or ethnicity.
I like the quote from Martin Luther King. He always talked to people. He said, if you cannot fly, you have to run. If you can't run, then you walk. If you can't walk, you can crawl. What I want to tell people in that quote, I want all South Sudanese to do something for that country. Whether you are in USA, you are in Canada, you are all over in the continents of the world, you have to do something for South Sudan. It can be a word that you can say. You can give ideas. And we need to leave talking about negative things. We don't want to spoil the brain of youth. A brain should not be a storage. It should be used for creativity instead of storing stories that happened a long time ago.
The Institute of Development Studies says more research is needed in South Sudan to determine and understand the experience of people with disabilities and the challenges they have. Maduk says he hopes to continue to use his voice to bring awareness to the challenges facing people with disabilities when he returns to South Sudan. Ayan Dangbure, VOA News, Washington.
Medical officials are trying out a new treatment drug for an outbreak of the deadliest strain of Ebola in neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. If it helps people who have contracted the highly contagious virus, it could become a key tool in containing Ebola. A vaccine was used to prevent infection in those who were exposed to it in the last outbreak a few months ago. Dr. Anthony Fauci of the U.S. National Institutes of Health near Washington has been involved in developing the treatment and both drugs and tells VOA's Paul Alexander about the latest treatment.
The intervention in question is called monoclonal antibody 114, and it is a treatment, not a vaccine. It's a treatment that is a monoclonal antibody that was derived and developed from a patient from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the DRC, back in the 1995 Kikwik outbreak in the DRC. An individual was infected, recovered from the infection, and we brought the person back to the United States to draw their blood and try and clone the B cells that make the antibodies that this person had produced in his body to then essentially clear his virus and hopefully protect him against any future exposure. So we developed this monoclonal antibody here, and we have done a number of tests in an animal model and have shown that when you infect an animal up to 5 days after they've become infected and you passively transfer this antibody, that you can actually protect the animals from getting sick and they recover. So the next thing to do would be to do a phase one trial in humans to determine if it's safe to use in humans. And we are doing that and just essentially finishing it up with three separate doses, 5 milligrams, 25 milligrams, and 50 milligrams in normal human volunteers here in the NIH community hospital, in the hospital that we have within the Washington, D.C., Maryland community. And now the antibody has been shipped to the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and as the WHO reported, it has already been given to five individuals who were infected with Ebola. We cannot say whether it has shown any benefit because we don't have anything to compare it with because it's being given as a compassionate use. So it is still an experimental therapy, but it is being used in this manner.
So when would you use this as opposed to the vaccine?
Well, the vaccine is used to prevent Ebola infection. This is used to give treatment to someone who's already infected. We can say it's safe because we've learned from our phase one study that there has been really uneventful and safe. It also has the advantage in that it's made in a lyophilized fashion, which means that it doesn't require the strict cold chain temperatures that you generally need when you ship interventions to countries that don't have good electricity to keep it well frozen below a certain level. Since it's lyophilized, which is namely freeze-dried, you can merely reconstitute it by the normal liquids, saline and others that you reconstitute this with.
Is it like the vaccine in that it's specific to one strain?
It is specific to the Zaire strain, which is the current strain that is currently in Democratic Republic of the Congo.
I recall that you talked about the possibility of getting this into the last outbreak. That did not come through?
Well, the outbreak essentially contained itself by public health measures, so there was no need to use it. But since we were in the process of working with them and we completed our phase one trial here, not completed, but we were well into our phase one trial here in the United States, they requested that we send it to them, and they then went ahead and used it.
That's Dr. Anthony Fauci of the U.S. National Institutes of Health speaking to VOA's Paul Alexander outside Washington yesterday. Finally, at least 22 people drowned today in the River Nile in Sudan when a boat sank. The dead include 21 students, according to Sudan's state news agency. Suna says the boat was carrying more than 40 students headed to school in the northern River Nile state. And that's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Abiba by Rex Omar. Listening to Rex Omar with the song Abiba. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, please let us know. You can find us at southsudan@voanews.com, or you can contact us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.